Well, thank you very much. I recognize so many of you from WSU and in the community, and it's nice to be among you once again. And I thank you, thank Cole for recruiting me for this part of the fellowship event. So I'm really grateful to that. Now, as I try to speak about democracy, I do so not only with just an academic interest, but also out of real concern that democracy as a way of life and as a guarantee of individual liberty and dignity is under threat, not only in this country, but around the world. So the goal for today, as Cole pointed out to me, is goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice. And what I would say is that there can be no peace without justice. Those people who are victims of injustice will not have peace on somebody else's terms. And people have peace and they develop faith in peace only when they have liberty. So I'll start with, so this is the first time I have entered this building. I have not been here before. So I came here and I see there are people interested in this work and they are here. And I went down to use the restroom. And there looked like another service going on there. And what this shows to me, validates to me, that people are free to do what they want to do, that there are no restrictions on them. And these liberties, these freedoms of a free society cannot be taken for granted. Because if people do not protect their liberties, they will lose them. And there are so many books being written, and we can talk about that. So let me first say that human beings need a form of government to make decisions for them. And throughout history, this is the basic question in political science. I'll try to make it not too academic. Basic question in political science is, given the necessity of a government, how should it best be organized? How shall we organize? Now, if you recall from your conversations and readings, Plato said philosophers should be kings, right? And then there was Aristotle, who said, maybe that is, but we cannot guarantee a good philosopher. See, he reluctantly opted for democracy, albeit at that time, slaves are not expected to be a part of society. So, democracy is the reason why we choose democracy is that it is the only form of government that is consistent with universal human aspiration to be free and to have their dignity intact. There is no other system of government which guarantees to individuals that they will not be arrested for no reason, they will be locked up for no reason, that somebody will not come and knock on their door at night and haul them away without giving any grounds. This is happening in many parts of the world today. It does not, should not happen in democracies. And that's why we have democracy, because democracy is a system of law. That there are laws that are made and the laws apply equally to all. And the law, when it applies equally to all, another part of democracy is that It is a system of government. Democracy, as I read, one of the authors made the statement that democracy is like a lottery. Everybody goes out and votes on election day, and some people win and some people lose. If you lose the lottery, it doesn't mean you say you have the right to win. You simply buy another ticket and try again. So a democracy implies the willingness to accept the verdict of the people, congratulate those who win, and move on. So that is a system of government. Now, I'm just making a few observations and then we can discuss. So, if you recall, during the Cold War, that is from 45 onwards until 1989 or so, the world was split up into the so-called free world or the first world, countries that were democratic and also capitalist, and they were also prosperous people. And then there was the communist world, which generalists call the second world, which were not exactly poor, but which were under fairly oppressive rulers who were, at least on the surface, they said they believed in communism. And then there was this so-called third world, that the countries that were colonies before, they had just become independent, and they were struggling to bring about development. Some were democratic and others were not. So, from the point of view of democracy, the first world was the envy of the world because people were free, they were also prosperous. So people had the best of both worlds, that people did not have to sacrifice their freedoms to have a good life. That is a materialistically affluent life. So people did not have to sacrifice bread for freedom, or freedom for bread, as the metaphor is used. So, the Cold War ended in 1989, and the communist countries realized they were on the wrong path, and they began to become democratic. But they were having problems, because they did not have a democratic background. So, we began to say, people in political science, those who studied democracy, that Western democracies were consolidated democracies. Consolidated democracies means that there was no chance that they would go back to some kind of dictatorship. They were here to stay, and democracy was the only game in town. It is the other countries that were called transitional democracies. They were struggling, they were having problems, and there were Western experts and went and advised them. But a decade ago or so, we came to the realization that even the so-called consolidated, well-established democracies maybe were not so consolidated. Maybe people were taking their freedoms for granted. So people had begun to, part of the society had begun to lose faith in the democratic process. So when I started this teaching this course at WSU, it was called Challenges of Democratization. That is, countries were democratizing, mainly in the Eastern world, and how they could overcome the problems. Now, 2 years ago, I changed the name to Challenges of democracy instead of democratization, because even democracies have challenges now. There are people, many opinion polls appear to be showing that perhaps a strong man, it's always a strong man rule would be better than the conflicts of democracy. And just this morning, as I was getting ready to leave to come here, I watched the CNN show called GPS 360, Global Public Square by Fareed Zakaria. And I just caught him saying, this year alone, there will be elections in 50 countries or so in the world. But the election that everyone is talking about is the election in America. Because if everybody is concerned that if in the United States somebody gets elected who is not so firmly committed to democracy, then the moral voice for democracy will be lost all over the world. And that is the concern in many parts of the world. So the question is, why? That if democracies had the best of both worlds, they were prosperous, and people were free, and everybody else in the world, if you talk to anybody in the world, so many opinion polls show that people want democracy. They want to be free. They do not want to be told what they should do. But the reality is that more and more people seem to find themselves living under governments that are denying them their freedom. So, I'd like to show you this. This is the reason why.
I can't hear you without the mic.
I'm just turning to this. So there is an organization. I'll come. So there is an organization in New York called Freedom House. And Freedom House conducts a study of all countries in the world and ranks them on three criteria. Countries that are free, countries that are partly free, and countries that are not free. So just look at this map. Not free countries, look at this big purple. Countries that are not free are not democratic. Countries that are not free are not democratic. Now, South America is
right
there. This is South America. Now, South America is doing better than other parts of the world. But elections have taken place. I'm going to stay close to this one. The question is, why? Why is this trend happening? And why should there be a reason for concern? The problem is that almost every country has problems, no matter how affluent it is. And it has become more and more difficult to solve those problems. When the problems are not solved, people turn to unconventional ways of solving them. And there are political leaders that arise that promise, if we are elected, we will solve these problems. We will be tough. And when that happens, they do get elected, and they find that they do not have any magic to solve the problems. So they begin to gradually appropriate more and more power for themselves. They say, we just need more power so we can do this. They are the enemies we have to deal with first. And it turns out that the enemies are simply their political opponents who have a different view about how to go about solving problems. I can get into any many countries that you want, but I will focus maybe, begin with the United States. And then I just came back from India and I stopped in Turkey, so I can touch on all three of them. So in the United States, the problem seen by many people, the problem is that we have too many immigrants who are coming in. And the term that has been used to describe that is invasion. We are being invaded by people, and they will take over our country and our culture will be lost. So what we need is a tough government that can either push them back or that can hold them in large camps of millions of people until their cases are resolved. An associated part of this is this, in my view, this is a very dangerous argument. The argument is that it is our culture that is being changed. We are not able to preserve our culture. Our culture is being lost by those who are coming in with a different culture, who do not respect our values. And the reason why I call that dangerous is that who defines what the essence of a culture is? What is American culture that we feel is being threatened or will be lost? What is it that will be lost as a result of people from other? Immigration is an issue that must be addressed competently. But the cultural argument, this is the exact argument that Hitler and Mussolini used. Culture. Remember, Hitler said, Aryan people, they are the people. And there are some people who are so impure that they cannot be, you cannot reform them, they must be exterminated. You all know that. So this cultural argument to me is particularly dangerous because it suggests to me that political leaders are the ones who define what the culture is. Then everybody must accept that. Culture is something that the characteristic ways in which people, many of you are learned people, you teach sociology and all that. But culture, trying to pin down a culture in terms of certain characteristics and say that is the essence of it and make a political decision, means that others are not competent to decide what that culture is. Now, that is the United States. In India, the same thing is happening. India, you know, is 80% Hindu. India and Nepal are the two countries where the majority of the people living are Hindus. So, the ruling party in India has said that India is surrounded by Muslim countries. We have to protect and preserve our Hindu culture. And in order to do that, they said the entire Indian political life must reflect Hindu value. So what does that mean for the Muslims and the Christians and the Buddhists? who live in that country. So their argument is they must live on our terms. They can be there. We are not telling them to leave, although in some cases they do. But in effectively what they are saying is, you will live in this country as second-class citizens. You just simply have to accept the fact that this is a Hindu country. And the same thing has happened in Turkey. Turkey used to be, remember, Turkey was a modern country where they accepted secularism. They said church and state will be separate. But then arise there are problems. Political leader, the current one, who has been there for 20 years now, he said, no, Turkey is a Muslim country. And he has used that religion to perpetuate his rule. And the fact is that the opposition has been throttled. And if you do not tolerate an opposition or make it difficult to participate in public life, you do not have a democracy. So the term that is being used to describe these governments is illiberal democracy. Liberal democracy comes from liberalism, liberalism that is a part of the Renaissance in Europe, Enlightenment. And the liberal government is one which recognizes that there are limits on its power. It cannot do what it wants to do. It has to do what the rules say it can do. And that is what we call a constitution. Illiberal governments are those who use the constitution to get the judges to accept whatever their interpretation is. And they try to justify the extraordinary powers they come to exercise. So, you can say, well, what if that happens? Doesn't society benefit? Does it become more prosperous? And we find that those countries that have these governments that have amassed extraordinary powers do not necessarily become economically prosperous. They do not necessarily do well, because they make bad decisions. People come to power and they become self-righteous that we know what to do. They don't listen to the experts, to the learned people. This is exactly what has happened in Turkey. About 10 years ago, Turkey was the model for developing countries. And look how even a Muslim country can have a democracy and also be economically prosperous. Now Turkey is experiencing 40% inflation rates because the president has decided this is what they are going to do. In the United States, can we say, I mean, according to Freedom House, U.S. is a free country. Will it remain so? So what are the troubling signs? In my view, the troubling sign is the judges are being threatened. The judges who are handling cases, they have received death threats. Death threats from people who support the people who are being tried under the law. If judges cannot give decisions or cannot make decisions based upon their understanding of law without intimidation, then governments will be free to do whatever they want to do. And that is why I am concerned that this threat to the judicial system and these arguments about culture, I mean, culture is always debatable in every country, and but that's what the people do, become involved in, to identify what that culture should be if it's changing, and if that's necessarily bad. But when the governments begin to act in the name of culture, I think that should worry everyone, because what about those people who don't agree with your understanding of what you're saying culture is? So this is exactly what has happened. That is why I chose that subtopic, what has happened to democracy. That about 10 years ago, we were very optimistic that democracy was going to spread. There was peace that was going to break out. Instead of talking about war breaking out, we talk about... Now, one last point. Why democracy and peace? So far, at least, the evidence holds that no two democratic countries have gone to war with each other. Democracies have attacked non-democracies. Non-democracies have attacked democracies. But no two democratic countries have gone to war with each other. And that should, if you really want a solution to the problem of war, perhaps we should consider democracy as an antidote to war. So with that, I'll stop, and hopefully we can have a discussion.
And I, at my age, wonder if our young people, the people that you teach, what do you hear them say? Is there hope there?
That the young people that I teach are woefully uninformed. So everything I say is just new to them. They said, oh, really? So I don't think they have enough basis to form opinions, to have a judgment. Hardly anyone reads the newspapers or has access, tries to access news on digital media. So that's what I find that, so every day in every single class I go to, I pull up headlines from newspapers. So this is what is happening in the world, and I said, oh. But there is, so in terms of, I'm hoping that as they finish school and go on to other things, they will become more concerned about the state of affairs in the country, and will do. I'm sure they will. At the moment, at the undergraduate level, I do not find any this desire to go out and change the world. But see, there are people who are also my colleagues, so maybe they have different views. So that is my impression, that our young people, our college going, even at the senior level, they have no incentive to, I would say, to become informed about political affairs, public affairs. Would you agree with me? Mm-hmm. The incentive is just not there, because whenever you say something, well, the question is, will this be on the exam? I think we should start saying, yes, it will be.